Okay, can you hear me? Yes, excellent. We're gonna get started. I have a lot of content and I'm always worried about going over, so I'm gonna try and be respectful of your time. So why don't we get started? Are we okay in the back to get started? I don't have to do anything for recording or anything like that. Just give me a thumbs up. Are we okay? Okay, all right. good morning. My name's Ben Riga. I am a technical evangelist at Microsoft. I focus on Windows. And today we're going to talk about building world-ready Windows Store apps. So all about doing that international thing and all that stuff. Before we get started, I wanted to give you some contact info. It's a warning. I tend to torture small animals. So please, to avoid that, follow me. My contact info, including all the various social networks, Twitter, Facebook, Google+, all email, all of that stuff is available at about.me/ben.riga. And I love it when you follow me. And even if you don't want to do it for me, do it for the kitty. Okay, anyway. So what we're going to talk about today is a lot of stuff. And that's why we're going to try and go relatively quickly. But of course, if you have any questions at all, please raise your hand. The lights are quite bright, so if I don't ask you, throw something, preferably not too heavy or strong. So four things we're going to cover. We're going to talk about localization of apps, so translation and all of the different languages that you put in your app. We'll also talk about something new that's in Windows 8 for the end user, but also is very important from a developer perspective, and that's language resolution, which means how does Windows pick which language in your app to show the end user? And it is fairly new. There's a lot of different variables, and so I wanted to walk through it so that you understood from your perspective what the end user will see, because that may affect how you build your applications. Then we'll talk about globalization, doing things like currencies and formatting of numbers and dates and times and all of that good stuff. And then at the very end, there's some very cool new tooling that is available now for developers around translation that will make your job very much easier, both for working with translators, but also for testing of your apps in localization. So we'll talk about that. That's the multilingual app toolkit. And then, like I said, at any point, if there's a question, if I'm going too fast, I've actually had a lot of coffee this morning, so if I'm going too fast, please let me know if you missed something. So first things first, I think you probably are well aware that Windows 8 is probably the single biggest developer opportunity in the market, both today and probably the biggest developer opportunity ever. You have, if you build a Windows application today, you have this unprecedented reach that you can get almost immediately. Hundreds of countries, 100 plus languages, many different markets, all sorts of different currencies. And that is a wonderful, wonderful thing. Probably the biggest thing that you can do to increase the number of downloads and hopefully the number of people that pay for your app and buy your content and buy whatever you're trying to sell is to translate or localize or make your app world ready. And it's actually fairly easy in Windows 8. It requires a little bit of planning ahead of time. And so we're going to walk through all of the various things that you need to think about so that you can do that. First things first, let's talk about some definitions. What does being world-ready mean, both from a developer perspective and from a user perspective? Starting first from the user perspective, when a user thinks of an application, they don't want to know about all the other languages, right? They want to know about their own language. They want to make sure that the content is in their language. We won't really talk about content today, but hopefully you're taking care of that from your service side. But also things like date is formatted correctly, text input works properly, the content, not of the app, but the content where they are interacting, navigating within your app should also be, okay, I lost my timer. Okay, anyway, let's keep going. So from the developer perspective, there's a few things that you have to keep in mind. One is you wanna build your app for multiple languages, but you don't want to have multiple projects or multiple solutions to do that. You want one code base that is identical across all languages. That just makes your job as a developer, your job for testing, your job for production, your job for posting and publishing to the store just becomes a lot easier. So you want to make sure you do that. You also want to separate your code from your UI, because that's really the only way you're going to manage to localize your application at scale, right? Going beyond one or two languages, you want to make sure that you're doing it properly. And then, of course, you want to support the linguistic and cultural needs of all users. And so you're not doing things hard-coded. You're going to try and use some of the facilities that Windows gives you to do that. So there's some new things that are coming that are available now in Windows 8 that are quite different than Windows 7. The first thing is, man, I'm shaking. I think I did have too much coffee. The first thing is that rather than choosing a language in Windows, now the user chooses a list of preferred languages. So, and the reason for this is that it's realistic today that many users understand and use different languages, not just one language. For instance, I myself primarily use English as a language, but I grew up in Montreal in Canada, and so I also speak French fairly fluently. And so if a if an app has French in it, but not English, then I can sort of skip down and use that as a primary language for an app. And my parents are Italian, so I also kind of know a little bit of Italian when I remember it. So, and this is very common across the world, especially in Europe, where many people speak many different languages. Probably in Netherlands, for instance, you probably prefer Dutch, but you also maybe speak English. And so if the language is not available in Dutch, you'll skip down to English so that you can use the app. And you want to And Windows handles this quite well. It allows the end user to choose a language, and then it sort of goes through what is in the app and chooses kind of almost automagically which language to show the end user. There's a lot of heuristics involved in that, a lot of experience that we have in that, and so we'll go through that in detail later through some various scenarios. Specifically from a web developer perspective, typically, when you're doing resources, you're pulling them down from a server, and Windows doesn't, it allows you to do that if you want, but it actually pulls the resources into your WinJS native application, and so you don't have to go to a server. It's all available to you locally in what's it called a PRI file, and it does all of that magically. And you're actually using the same resource management system. It's one that Windows provides for you across all of the various languages. Windows manages that for you. Hopefully, if you've already started building for Windows, you know that Windows automatically scales images for you. You give it different images with different names. There's a naming standard. We'll go through this in detail. And based on that, it will actually scale your image. So if your user is at one level, it'll scale it at a 100 or 140 or 180, depending on the size and resolution of their screen. Well, it does the same thing with localized images, if you have them. And so it'll manage all of that for you. And then finally, I alluded to this earlier, there is now some new tooling available called the Multilingual App Toolkit, and we'll spend some time looking at that later. Okay, so when we're talking about building world-ready apps, there really are three steps, and so we're going to go through these in order. The first is localization, where you're translating the application, the actual text in the application. Then globalization, where you're managing all of things like texts and numbers and currency and dates and all that stuff. And then finally, once your app is built or as your app is built, you're sending it out for translation so that your local people that are doing your localizers, people that speak those other languages, can translate from whatever your primary language is. If it's Dutch, they're going from Dutch to English or various things around that. And then there's also the concept of testing. You also want to be able to test whether your app is localizable, and we'll talk about that at the end. Okay, first step, localization. As I said, there's a few things that you have to do in your app. The first thing, there is a concept in the app manifest called the default language. You get to choose that as a developer, and that's something that Windows will do as sort of a fallback. If the end user, if they can't match the right language, it's going to use the default language as the fallback. And then once you've set your default languages, then you have to give the solution various language files. And so you've separated out all of your resources, all of your strings, into these resource files, and then Visual Studio will compile those and then give those to Windows so that Windows can manage and show the end user the right app. When we're talking about file-based resource management, here we're talking about things like images, HTML, CSS, all of those things can be managed on a file-based way, and it does this using a very specific file folder naming convention. And this is useful for things like images is typically where you would use it, where you have an image that needs to be different depending on the language or the culture of the end user of your application. I would caution you that if you can avoid doing this, you should, just because it's more expensive. It actually costs more, right? Not only do you have to translate whatever text is in there, but then you have to go and find a designer to redesign your images, and then you have to have multiple scalings of your image, and then you got to do that for every single language, right? So if you have dozens of languages in your app, or perhaps Windows does support over 100 languages, you can see the matrix sort of explodes out. It's expensive, so if you can avoid that, avoid it and try and do it as part of text and then layer your text on images and so on. There's ways to get around it. Understandably, sometimes you can't avoid it, so Windows does allow you to do it. And the way you do it is creating alternate file assets for different languages and different DPI, different resolutions on the screen, and then you ensure that your elements are tagged correctly. There is a naming convention. I apologize. This might be an eye chart for the guys at the back. I will make my slides available for you if you need to review it later. But there is this sort of naming convention. We have folder name slash qualifier name value slash qualifier name value slash qualifier name value. There's a way to do it. And here's an example here where in your folder, you might have a file that's in images slash en-us slash home region dash USA slash logo dot scale dash 100 underscore contrast dash white dot png. That's your file that's in your folder. When you're referring to that file in your solution, you would just say images slash logo. And then Visual Studio actually combines all of that into this PRI file in this sort of essentially a lookup table that's very fast and high performance and all that. And when you say images dash slash logo, based on whatever the end user has set as a language, as a region, as a scaling contrast, it will pick the right file. Does that make sense? The other step, and probably the more common one, is actually localizing a string. And this is so that you avoid having hard-coded strings in your code. And there's a couple of ways to do that. Basically, you move your string from markup to resource file. For web or HTML style files, it's res JSON files. I'll show you what those look like in a minute. Of course, if you're using XAML, they're called ResW. I am, by the way, if you are XAML developers, I'm doing this exact same session later today for XAML and C# and so on. Okay, so you move your strings out of your markup, out of your code, into a resource file, and then you use the resource loader dot get string to retrieve those files. By giving it the name, it'll retrieve the value for you. And then finally, same thing in markup, where you would move your strings again from markup to resource, and then adding the UID to the elements. And then in HTML, it's win.gs.resources.processall. That's a command that you give to Windows, and then it actually processes all of those elements, takes them out of your PRI file, moves them into your HTML so that it actually appears. And then you mark your resources using a data win res attribute. The final thing that you need to worry about is the app's presence, not just what is in the app, but the sort of metadata around the app. So things like your start screen, what does it look like in your search window, the splash screen, and basically you do that by localizing your app manifest. And again, the strings for your app manifest, your images, should all be in your resource file. And then you add the references into the app manifest using ms-resource in your URI screen, scheme. So enough talking about it. It's all abstract. So let's actually go through. I have an example where we can actually see this in action. OK, so let me just, let's see. First things first. I am going to show you, this is the new thing that I mentioned earlier that Windows does around languages for end users. And so this is in my control panel, I have set my languages, as I said earlier, English is my primary language, so I have that as the beginning, and then my apps would fall back to French if that's available. I don't actually speak Dutch, but I'm going to use it later in my demo, so Dutch would be the next one. And there's also this concept of pseudo-localization, which is super, super handy for testers, for testing whether your app is localizable before you even give it to a translator. So we'll look at that later today. But this is sort of where you tell Windows which languages you prefer and in what order. And so right now, English is at the top. And so if I run my app, it will run and show me stuff in English. Let's see what that app looks like, and then we'll show you how you would actually localize that. So there's my app. It's a very simple app, a standard template that I'm using here, where there's not really any Chrome here, except perhaps there's a title of the app, so I might want to actually localize that. This is my handy-dandy invoicing application, and so I want people to pay me, and so there's my app, there's content. There's a few other things that Windows gives you, and so if I right-click or swipe up, you see that there's an app bar that has a number of buttons along the button, along the bottom, and then also on the right, there's a settings, and you'll see that there's permissions is a Windows thing, but if I go to language, for instance, you'll see that I have a title there, language, and then I also have this image that just asks whether you speak English. So that's all well and good, but it's in English. So how would we translate that into another language? So let's go through this in order. The first thing is that title where it said, pay me, please. That is, hopefully you can see this at the back. There are some pages here, and the main page is items. And so if I open my, actually I have it open already. So here's my items.html page. That was that primary page that I had there. And if I go down to the title, if I can find it. Here's my page title. And so there's not really anything going on here that's too fancy. I have all of that standard stuff. And then there's this, the tag actually says pay me please dash JS. And if you remember, we just ran the app. It didn't say pay me please dash JS. It actually said pay me please. And the way it does that is by my telling it using data-win.res, text content, pull whatever the value is for the name app title. And where do I get app title? Where I have a folder called resources. And so let's look at the resource folder. And you'll see here that I have three languages in my resource folder, English for US, French from France, and German from Germany. So if I look at French from, let's look at English, and I open my resources.res.json. There's a different way of doing this for XAML, but this is the way you do it in HTML land. So here's that thing that I said. It's called app title, and here's the actual value, pay me, please. And then I also have _apptitle.comment. This is a comment I would give to the translator where I'm giving the translator some context around things like, maybe there's a word in there that's a proper name and you don't want them to translate that or to get confused, or you might want to tell them this is the same string as some other string and so on. So just giving some context to the translator for whatever you want. This is not actually used in the application. It's used as a comment, just like you use a comment in code. So there's that first thing. The other thing we saw was, where's my file? Items.html, there it is. And so the other thing we saw was the app bar. The app bar is a little different, but works kind of the same way. So there's my button. There's a bunch of buttons I had in the app bar. And you'll see that I'm telling it here, data-win.res, win control, and then I'm telling it the label, that's the text that it's immediately under the button, has some text that you're going to localize. And don't forget, Windows supports both touch, but also mouse and keyboard. And so for a mouse user, you might have a tooltip. So if the user hovers over the button, you might want to show some other text. And so in this case, I have edit label and edit tooltip. And so again, if I go back to my resources.json file, whoops, this is the German one. Here you see edit, and then edit tooltip, remove tooltip, right? And so if I look at this same thing in French, you can see here, and I don't know if my French is properly translated, but app title, for instance, says "Payez-moi s'il vous plaît," and edit label is modifié, right? Am I making sense? So typically in these sessions, people are afraid to ask the first question. So someone's going to have to be brave and ask the first question. And then usually what happens is there's everyone else piles on. So who's going to be the brave one? Are there questions? Or if I'm, oh, excellent. So there's someone in the back. I'm sorry, I can just barely hear you because of the fans. I can only hear every other word because of... Okay, so the question is, what happens if the identifiers don't match up? In other words, if there's a mistake in your code? Is that what you're asking? I can't hear you, I'm sorry. Yes, okay. So essentially, Windows will try and do the right thing. And essentially what happens is it will default to the default language. And so for instance, if I have, what happens in this case, so if you look back to items.html, right? Here is what it's going to do. I'm giving it edit, right? So there's some text that you're actually putting in, and it's going to use that text. So if you give it some text, the same thing in the title, for instance. If I can find it again, here's the title, right? So the title actually has some text in the markup, which it would use, except that now I'm telling it, go and look up and use the app title text. And then if it can't find that, then it will default back to that. Vice versa, if you have, let's say you have all your text in your English language, but for whatever reason, you forgot to translate it in your Dutch resource file, then it will drop back to your English. Was that your question? That was your original question, right? Okay, thumbs up. Okay, so I guess we're going to have a problem with questions from the back of the room. There's not microphones or anything, right? I guess not. Okay, so I apologize for that. You're just going to have to shout because I can't hear. There's some really loud fans behind me, so I can't hear you. Now I lost my way. I guess we're going to just have to stop there. What was I going to do? Oh, right. So the other thing was the settings. And so if we go to, let's see if I can find it. My settings are defined in default.js. And so somewhere here, if I can find it, here it is. And so this is in my event listener. So when my app gets activated, it comes down and it creates a settings command. This is part of the contracts that you build into Windows 8. And so here, my settings command is telling it what page to load, and we'll go and look at that page in a minute. But I'm also giving it the title. And this is the title that when you go to the settings flyout, the first one that you see, there's a title that one is permissions, and Windows handles that one for you. In this case, I'm adding the language one, and I'm telling it that the title for that is lang setting title, right? And so again, if I go to my resource file, lang setting, I messed up, hang on. Let's go back to that again. I'm actually newing up, I'm using a resource loader, right? And I'm saying lang setting title, go and use the resource loader to get the string called lang settings. And then whatever comes back is put into lang setting title, and that's what I'm using. I'm losing my mic here. Okay. And so now if I go to my resource file, I'm looking for lang settings. Where is it? There it is. In there. So the word is language. And then, of course, if I go to French, as an example, it's lang. And French would be, I think, German would be Sprach, and so on. And then the final thing that we looked at was the actual settings page. Let me see if I can find that page. Here it is, the lang settings page. And so here you'll see that my settings page, this is the HTML for the settings page. I'm just saying images/language.jpg. Do you see that here? I'm just giving it the source. I'm giving it width and so on. I'm not telling it anything else. So, but if I now go and look at images, right? Now let's look at the images folder. You'll see that the images folder has there is no language.jpg, right? I'm looking for language.jpg. It's not there. And so Windows is going to try and find it using that naming convention. And so in my case, I'm telling it that maybe I'm in en.us, and there's that one that we saw earlier. And then if we go French, right, parlez-vous français? And so that's how it finds it. I just tell it images/language.jpg, and then Visual Studio combines all of that and does all the lookup for me, and then hands it to Windows, where Windows does all the work. Okay, so let's actually run this. Let me show you now. If I switch to French, I move French up to be my preferred language, and run this. You'll see that now it's in French, of course. That you see the title has been translated. If I right-click or swipe up, might be hard to read in the back, but the app bar buttons at the bottom do say modifier, supprimer, ajouter, and so on. And then if I swipe from the right, okay, apparently that's not going to work. Let's just use the button. So you'll see that while permissions is the same in both languages, but it does say long, which is what we told it to say. And if we go into that, you'll see that there's my image. It's choosing the right image based on my language. Any questions on this? It is pretty straightforward, but it does require some planning ahead of time, right? Basically, you're moving your images and you're referring to your images in the right way and putting them in a way that Windows can find and do the lookup. And then strings, of course, you want to pull your strings out of your code. You never want to hard code your strings because that makes it next to impossible to localize. Okay. So, oh, the one thing we didn't do was, let me do this here. So, hang on. Okay. So you see here, well, did it again. You see here on the start screen, it actually says, payez-moi s'il vous plaît. So the question is, where is that coming from? And that is coming directly from your app manifest. And so if I pull up here it is. My app manifest, and rather normally you would just have a static string here that just said pay me please, and instead I'm saying ms-resource:app title, and then Visual Studio will then say, oh, he's looking for a resource, let me go and pull the resource from the resource file, right? And we can see it's the same one we use for the title page. The thing I would note is that all of these things are localizable, not just the strings, and so for instance, if I want description to be localizable, then I would say ms-resource:, and description, and then you would go and it would go and find your description from your resource instead of, in this case, where I'm actually hard coding it. And also things like all of your images, right? So here's images/logo.png. That's my logo for my 150 by 150 px file. That also can be translated by using the same naming convention, right? So if I say images/logo, again, it will just go and look in my images file, and if it doesn't, in this case, there is a logo.png, so we'll just pull that. But if there wasn't, then it would look for it in the files by language. Am I making sense? Is this good? Is this interesting? Are you guys learning anything, or is this really boring? I'm learning a lot up here. Okay, let's switch back to slides and talk a little bit about the next step, which is how does Windows find the right language based on what the end user has asked for? As you saw earlier, the primary mechanism for the end user to tell Windows which language that he or she wants is by providing a list and putting them in preferred order, and then Windows will use that. You, as a developer, are providing resources, and those resources are then bound into your app manifest. It's done for you automatically. There's a resource string. If you go and look for this in your app manifest, it's a XAML file. It will just generate that for you. You don't have to worry about it. And so now you have two things. You have the list of languages that the end user wants, and then you have the list of languages that the app provides. And then Windows has to match for that. And there's all sorts of heuristics to do that. There's one other thing that you need to be aware of, in that sometimes the end user, even though they've already specified their preferred languages, they might want to override that for whatever reason, for content or what have you. And so one example, one scenario might be, and this is the example I have here, this is the Bing News app, for instance. So I might be an English person living in the Netherlands, and so I am speaking Dutch all the time, and I'm using, my apps might be in Dutch and so on. But when I go to Bing News, I want to know the language, the news from my hometown. I might want that to be in English and to see the content in English. And right, so as a way of doing that, the Bing News team provided a language override. And basically what you're doing there is you're saying, okay, I know what languages are in the app and I know what languages the end user said. Forget all that and just choose the one that I'm telling you here. Okay? And so effectively it just overrides all of that stuff and shortcuts directly to a particular language. Be careful doing this. This is not something you want to do switching back and forth. It's persistent and expensive in terms of resources and performance. So you don't want to do this very often. You don't want to do it, for instance, to switch languages so that you can do logging or things like that, right? You want it, there's different ways to do that. That's a different topic. Depending on how you've structured your app, it may require your app to reload. For instance, Bing News, it actually, when you switch languages, it tells you, okay, you got to reload the app, and next time we reload, it will take that into account. You don't have to do that. It depends on how you structured your app and whether you've made that available. It's not for transient changes, like I said earlier. And I'm not going to talk too much about that. There is a specific API that's there, and you can get to that. Again, you can look that up in when you get my slides. Okay, so there's a bunch of different scenarios. Let's go through a few different ways that Windows intelligently matches. The first one and the easiest one is the app has a number of languages. In this case, it's English GB, English from Great Britain, and German for Germany. Those are the ones that the developer has provided. The user has said, well, I'm in London, so I'm going to use English GB, and there is no override happening. Well, then Windows is going to match those two, and it's going to say, well, the only language that works here is English GB, and so everything will be in English GB, right? So that's the kind of default scenario. That's sort of a baseline. So let's change some things around and see what happens. So is there a question? Okay. So the next one is there's three languages, German, French, and Italian. But the French is French from France. The end user has said, no, I want French from Austria. Right? And so, again, no override. So Windows now says, okay, well, the end user, the only languages that match here are French. And the end user wants French from Austria. Well, there is no French from Austria, and so Windows is intelligently going to know, okay, well, the closest thing is French from France, and so that's going to use that as the fallback, right? And, of course, if there is, well, I mean, we'll go through a number of other scenarios. Next one is English is the default, English from the U.S., French from France, English from U.K., and the end user maybe is living in Montreal, and they have English from Canada and French from Canada as the primary languages. Well, Windows says, okay, well, English and French are what we want, and now we're going to use English from the U.S. as the fallback from English from Canada. Is that making sense? Sorry, yes. So the question is, how does this differ from the way .NET has been doing it for a long time? .NET does not provide, or previously, the end user didn't provide a list of languages. They provided a language. And so there is no fallback to figure out, right? So I wouldn't know. I would choose English from Canada, and then it's up to you, right? If there's no English, then too bad.
But if you have, if you had like English US in the app.
Yeah, English US, again, it would be confused with that. So the heuristics were not there. And so in many cases, you would say, so the question was, well, what if the app had English US and the end user had English Canada? I believe previously there would not be a match, and so there would not be a fallback. So then in cases like that, you might actually want to say, it's just English, and then you might want to have some additional strings in English US. So it becomes a little bit more complicated in terms of translation. This is much easier. So what happens in the case of the default match? So here's a case where the app supports Spanish from Spain, Spanish from Mexico, Spanish from Latin America, Spanish from Brazil. Obviously, this is a developer maybe that is in Spain. And then the end user might be somewhere else in the US, right? And so I've provided a language that says English US. Well, Windows is going to look at those and say, sorry, there's no match. And so what do? Well, in that case, I'm going to choose the default language that the developer has provided as the default language. And that default language is Spain. And so everything will default to Spain. Spanish, I mean. Making sense? The next one is what happens in partial matches. So here, and that might occur because maybe I'm not finished my translation. Maybe my translator's only provided me a few strings, or maybe we forgot to add some strings. Maybe the developer added some strings in the primary language, but the translator was not told and they weren't provided. Or you might have a scenario where there are languages that are very, very similar and you may want to only translate partial matches. So for instance, English US and English UK are very similar, but there are some words that are very different, right? So for instance, elevator in the US would be a lift in the UK. And so you would only want to translate the strings where they're different. Make sense? And so Windows will take care of that. So here's the case where I have Spanish from Spain, which is the default, and Catalan, which is only a partial translation, and then French from France. And the end user has said, well, Catalan is my preferred language, but I also know French from France as my secondary language. So it's going to find those two languages. And what it's going to do is it's going to try and provide Catalan wherever it can. And then if there are not matches in Catalan, then it will fall back to the next one, French from France, right? And so depending on what happens. And so it depending on how you do that, it might be an odd experience for the end user. So you want to be careful how you do that and think about that. There's also the case, we talked about this, the override case, where you have a bunch of languages and a bunch of user languages. And basically, the end user said, forget all that. I want English UK. Even though I said German is my preferred language, I want English UK. And so the app languages are provided here, and it's just going to default to whatever the override is. So those are the various scenarios. Sometimes you may want to know what's going on behind the scenes. And so there are APIs for you to figure out, OK, what are the user-declared languages? There's an API call where it will actually return you all the languages for the end user, for whatever reason. I don't know why you would want to provide that, but it's something that if you have a scenario where that makes sense, you can do that. Same thing, you may want to look at what are the app declared languages to provide those for whatever reason. Perhaps in your override list, you may want to provide a list of languages that the end user can choose. And then you can also say, well, what are the languages that were resolved by Windows? And so the Windows would provide that. Okay, so the next step is, we've talked about localization. Let's switch the gears now and talk about globalization. And here we're going to talk about numbers and currency, date and time. There are also capabilities around collation, sorting and grouping and that sort of thing. And then also calendar. I'm not going to talk about those today just for lack of time. We're going to focus on numbers and currency and date and time because those are usually the ones that are most used. But I wanted to mention the others because they may be important for you, for your scenarios, and there are APIs for you to go and have a look at that. There's different APIs for formatting and parsing, and they're in the windows.globalization.number formatting namespace. And you have things like decimal formatter, percent formatter, per mil formatter, and currency formatter, and you use those in a number of different ways. Same thing with date-time formatting. It's a different namespace, windows.globalization.datetime formatting, and then use the date-time formatter and tell it how you want to format. And then there's also the calendar one. We're not going to see that one today, but it's available there. So rather than actually describe the APIs, let's actually look at how the app handles them. So let me just run the app again. And before I do that, let me switch back to English, and then we'll see how it changes. Whoops, wrong one. We'll see that one later, I promise. This one. Okay. And so we've seen the primary page. There's this other page, which is, well, my touch for whatever reason is not working. Huh? There we go. So this is this secondary page, and we'll look at this page in a second. So again, this is my invoicing application, and so I have my billing rate, $1,000. It's normal for me. Of course, because I billed $1,000, I have to give a 95% discount because nobody's going to pay me for that. So you'll have to give me your addresses later so that I can invoice you for this work. And this is various items that I do and the discounting and so on. So just a very simple example of how I'm formatting different things. You know, numbers, currencies, percentages, dates. And so let's have a look at how those are formatted. So this is in English, but it doesn't really matter because Windows handles that all for me. So this was in, let me stop the app. And let's go to a file called split, here it is, split.js, right? And so in split.js, there's a few things that are going on. Let's look at the first one, which is, let me see if I can find it here. Okay, so first things first, I'm hooking up my billing rate. Actually, before we do that, let's look at how we formatted dates. And so here is, remember the date in the top left-hand corner? I'm using windows.globalization.datetime formatting, and I'm grabbing the datetime formatter and telling it I want month and day, right? And I'm putting that, I'm hanging on to that formatter in LDATEFMT, and then I'm giving it the date that I want to format, which is the current date and time, right? And then I'm putting that into, I'm getting the element in my document called today's date, and I'm telling it format that using the date to format. And so what happens here is that Windows does all the work for me. Because I'm telling it what to do, I'm telling it I want month and day, right? And then Windows says, oh, okay, well, in English, month goes first and the day goes second. If I was in France, it would be the day first and the month. And so there's all sorts of heuristics there where it just knows what's going on behind the scenes. And you can define that. It's defined by the operating system, and the end user can actually override it if they want, just for, because people often ask about this. So for instance, in France, you can see I have France defined. And so here is the date time formats and so on that I have. Oops. Yeah, because let me move French up and now change date and time, and you'll see the date and time is a little different, right? The other thing that I should mention, and I get caught by this all the time, is the home location. And the home location usually is static because your home location is your home location. And so that's where it takes the format of the currency, comes from the home location, not from the language that you've chosen. And so when you're testing for that, you have to change your home location and then make those changes. Okay? So let's look at some of those other things. So we looked at the date format, right? Date to format was today's date, and then using that date formatter, and Windows does all the work for me, and I put that into my element. Same thing with numbers. And so here's my entry billing date. Where is it? Here it is. Again, I'm newing up a decimal formatter, and then finding my billing rate, and I'm formatting the billing rate from a local variable that I've defined called billing rate. Yes, sir?
Why do you use local formatters to change
the culture? Say that again?
Why do you use the formatters and not just change the culture?
Why do I use the formatters and not just change the culture?
The culture info can change.
The culture info can change, correct. But that's the end user that's changing the culture info, not the app. So the question was, well, why are you using the formatter and not giving it the culture info? Because you don't know the culture info when you're writing your app, right? All you know is you're gonna format a number and you want the number to have groupings, or you want the number to be a currency, or you want it to be a date or whatever. And then it's up to the end user to tell you what language and culture they want, right? And so that's done at runtime by combination. Actually, it's done at runtime by Windows. And so a few things here that we've done. So I'm leaving the hours at fixed hours and so on. And so that's all good. The other thing that we see here is parsing. I didn't actually show you this. I'll show you it in a second. Is that I could actually change the number, right? I can change my billing rate from $1,000 to probably $1, which is probably what I'm worth at this point. So and the way you do that is Maybe you saw that I added an event listener here on my billing rate field, right? I find my billing rate field and I have an event listener that says anytime I remove focus from that field, then I want you to parse and see what the end user did there. And so there is a, see if I can find it. Actually, let me just go to definition that's somewhere up top. Yeah, here it is, right up at the top here. And so here's my parse billing rate field. I'm finding the billing rate, value a string, pulling the billing rate field to get whatever value the end user has done. And then I'm formatting it, telling it I want to parse it as a double and get that value. And then I'm not even sure that you need the null. I always add it for safety reasons, but I think it will actually set it to zero if it is null. If it checks billing rate is null, I'm setting it to zero. And then I'm using the decimal formatter for fraction strings and so on for the billing rate. And then I'm doing a recalc because I'm recalculating the rest of the page and doing formatting there. Go ahead. Yep. It's going to hurt you? I'm not sure I understand the question.
If your billing rate is in pounds normally, and all of a sudden that same amount is now showing in dollars.
Correct.
Well, it's going to hurt.
How's that going to hurt?
Well,
pounds are worth more than dollars, right?
So,
so I think what you're asking is, why, if I'm parsing in dollars and the end user changes to pounds, how do I... Ah, okay. Well, that's a coding decision. So the question was, well, how do I fix it so that it doesn't change the currency? That's up to you to do that. If you do that, then you're not going to use these parsing functions. You'll just use your own to do whatever it is you want. But normally, if the user is in the UK, you want them to use the app as if it was in pounds. And if they're in the US, then you want them to use US dollars in Canada and, Netherlands and so on. So you're going to want to allow the end user to change that. And if they do change that, then you want to account for that, right? So you don't want to be parsing a number that is in Dutch, where I think you have spaces instead of commas and commas instead of periods. So it's a very different way of parsing. For you to have to write the logic to do that is insane. Windows has done that for you. Take advantage of all of our, decades of work on Windows internationalization and globalization. We'll take care of all the work for you. So if the end user tells us they are in the UK and they're entering a number, and the number has 1000, then Windows knows that means 1,000. Right? If I put 1000 and I'm in the US, then it will probably fail on the parsing and tell you it's a zero. Does that make sense? So let's actually change the language and see how that affects. I already did change the language, so let's just run it again. How am I doing on time? I think I'm okay still. And so here is my language. Now you'll notice I'm in France, but the numbers, I should have changed my home location, but you'll notice the formatting of the text is in European or French format, right? 1000. But because my home location is US, it's using the dollar sign, right? If I had been smart and changed it to France, it would have changed that to euros. Make sense? And then also, if you look at the date up at the top, 7 mars, Windows knows that March is mars in France, and so it does that for you, puts the number first and so on. Same thing in 1000, I've given it fixed numbers and so on, and so right, if I say 20 and then tab out of there, it messes up. There we go, right? Is that making sense? It's pretty straightforward. Again, I caution you to don't do this sort of thing in hard code. It just makes it much easier for the end user if you do that all. Let Windows do the work for you. Okay. So the next step is, let's come back to my slides. Let's talk about once you've more or less finished, the next step is translation, or usually it's done in parallel, right? As you start your app, You're going to start sending stuff to your translators, and they're going to do the translation. There are a number of different ways to do translation, as you can imagine. You can do it yourself, and so then you're actually using Visual Studio, just like I did here. I open up my res files, and I have this crazy JSON file, or in XAML, I have a table there, and I can start typing. But I, personally, I only know three languages, and I probably only know one of them good enough to speak and write. And so it's not a good option, right? It's certainly not something you would want a translator. I don't know about you, but I probably don't want a translator in Visual Studio with access to my source code, right? I don't know your translators, but most of them don't do that. Oh, by the way, I should mention there's a couple of resources that Microsoft provides. And one of them that's really good is the Microsoft Language Portal with Microsoft product glossaries. So as you can imagine, Microsoft has many products, and we've been doing localization for not even years, decades. And so we've done a lot of translation, and the Microsoft Language Portal provides you the glossary. And so essentially, if you're saying, well, how do I translate the word edit? I bet you Microsoft has done that. You would go to the language and you would say, how does Microsoft translate edit from English into Dutch and German and Italian? And it will actually give you that. And it, as you can imagine, there's lots of different translations there. Very handy. So take advantage of that. I encourage you to use that when you're doing your translations. There's also something called a multilingual app toolkit, which we're going to see in a couple minutes. And then there's all sorts of other options as well. Of course, you can use crowdsourcing. There's websites out there that allow you to post your languages, and then your end users could come and provide your translations for you. One that I've seen recently is called Got Translation, I think it's called, or gotlocalization.com. And it's quite handy. You post it up there, your end users come, they translate for you, and then when you get to a certain percentage, maybe 90% translated for a new language, you might want to then pull that into your Visual Studio and recompile, and suddenly you have a new language. And then there's all sorts of professional third-party services. There's websites out there that allow that. TransFX is one that I've seen, but there's many of them, right? For the purposes of this session, we're going to talk about the Multilingual App Toolkit, which is a new tool. If you're doing any sort of localization, I strongly encourage you to go and pull it down and use it. Even if you're not going to use it for the translation, it will come in very handy for testing, and you'll see why in a few minutes. The first thing is it translates directly into the Visual Studio IDE, so it allows you to add and manage translation files. And here's the handy part, which is it provides a pseudo language engine. In other words, it will actually take a language string in whatever language you provide as your default language. In my case, it would be English. For yours, it might be Dutch. And then it would translate it into pseudo language, which is a very cool way of providing something that would allow you to test for what is called localizability. And I'll talk about that in a few minutes. It's easier to show than it is to describe it. It provides for translation file export and import with a round trip. In other words, it does comparisons, and it updates, and it does all of that standard stuff. And so you can then send and receive resources to your friends. Maybe you have someone in the US that knows English who's going to translate for you, and someone in Spain who's going to do your Spanish, and so on. Or if you have a translator, you just export it and send it. And essentially, it does it as email, right? You just say file, send, and it will open up email, whatever, Outlook, and attach that. And then the translator then uses this thing, this XLIF lightweight editor, which is essentially a very easy way for a translator to look at the text and the text that want to translate, and then do the comparison, and then translate for you, and then send it back to you. So they don't have to learn Visual Studio. They're not looking at XML or JSON files and doing that. The other thing that it provides is translation suggestions for Microsoft Translator, another service that Microsoft provides in the Bing group. It's actually out of our Microsoft research, where it will take a string and try and translate for you, so that it will give you an approximation of how that translation might work. I'll show you how that works in a couple seconds. Actually, let me do it right now. Okay, so you probably saw that. Oh, I closed it. Let me just reopen it. Okay, so this is another file. It's called Woof, which is, as you probably saw earlier, it's an app that provides a list of dogs and pictures and some text and so on, which is just a goofy example to do translation. And so here is a standard file which is not yet translated. And so you will see that I have ENUS, that's my standard default language. And so in there, there is a, I think this is my JSON one, so I should have a resources.json. And so here is my, I don't know why it's going slow there. Here's a bunch of strings that are translated, right? And they're all in English, and it's all about dogs. And let me just run this so we can see what this app does, and then we'll see how we translate it using the multilingual app toolkit. It's kind of a goofy thing that the app does. So things like you have a title, you have some text, you have some groupings, right? If I look at happy dogs, I can see happy dogs. So it's the standard three-page template that we have in Visual Studio. So let's look at how we would translate that with Multilingual Toolkit. Of course, I've already installed Multilingual Toolkit. It's a very simple thing. I think it's like 3 or 4 meg. You download it, you install it. It automatically integrates into Visual Studio, and it shows up in my Tools menu. So now if I go to Tools, you can see right at the very top, it says Enable Multilingual App Toolkit. And you'll see when it does that it's going to take my ENUS, and it's going to create a new folder called Multilingual Resources. And in Multilingual Resources, it's added a first language. And that language is pseudo language. We'll see that one in a second. I'm going to add a second language, so I'm going to select the project and say, add a translation language. And now it provides all of the various translation languages that are available. So let's, for fun, let's add Dutch. And I can choose whether I add Dutch for everybody or if I can add Dutch just for Netherlands, right? So let's just add Dutch for Netherlands. And there's my Dutch for Netherlands. Now, if I open that, you'll see that there's nothing in it yet. And so the way that I populate that is by doing a build. So I'm going to rebuild the application. And when you rebuild the Multilingual App Toolkit, behind the scenes is actually seeing, oh, look, there's new strings. The new strings are the original strings. So it's going to take the strings from the resources.json file, and it's going to pull them into this standard XLIF file that that it uses. So now if I go back in to Dutch, now I have my strings, right? Now, of course, it hasn't actually translated them, right? It's got my source, which is from my EN-US. That's my standard default language. And it's got the translation. So the first thing that's handy here is I can say, you know what? Go ahead and translate all of these. And what it's now doing is it's sending each of the strings one at a time to Bing Translator. And Bing Translator is then going to translate. And this is usually fun for laughs. So here, happy dogs becomes happy honden. Is that even close? Is happy a Dutch word? No, I didn't think so. Okay, so anyway, so it's giving you a first pass. Please don't publish your apps with Bing Translator. It's a first step that you would then hand off to someone to verify. But it's a very handy step, right? And we'll see what it's done there. The next one, I mentioned this earlier, was, let me save the changes, and was a pseudo language. And now here also you'll see that it has the first pass, which is just in English. And I apologize for this, you'll notice the translate is not lit up in color, because when I tell it to translate, it's going to translate all of these resources, not using Bing Translator, but using a specific formula that is really handy for your testing. I apologize that this is hard to read in the back. There's no way to change the format. Sorry? Was there a question? No? Okay, so here's what it's done. Let's take happy dogs again, right? Happy dogs is a string in English. It's taken happy dogs and it's giving each of the strings a unique code in parentheses, right? So it's got a square bracket and then a unique code and a square bracket. This is really handy because when, as a tester, I'm looking at a page and I'm seeing text that says happy dog, but happy dogs might be three different strings around the thing. So which happy dogs are you referring to? Well, then the tester can say, well, I'm referring to the code E02AC, right? And so then the developer can then find the actual code that is the problem, right? So that's the first thing that's really handy. The other thing that it's doing is it's taking your text and sort of pseudo-coding it. In other words, it's taking happy and it's changing the H so it has an accent, and the A has an accent, and the P is different. Maybe it's a Greek P, and so on. And so the text immediately looks like it's translated. And the reason you want that is because it makes it very obvious when you're looking at a page that has everything pseudo-translated, the ones that are not translated, the ones that have not been localized, immediately pop up. You can see, oh, look, this one has not been localized yet. Oh, look, it's hard-coded. Let me go and fix that, right? So that's really handy. And then the other thing is it puts a square bracket and then an exclamation on both sides of your string. That's really handy in localizability because typically when you're localizing, it doesn't matter what language you're going from to what language you're going to, your strings will always be longer. I don't know why that is, but it's always about 25%. Especially if you're going from like English to German, where I think it's usually three times longer. I'm joking, obviously. But the handy part there is if you can't see the beginning square bracket and the end square bracket, then you've got a problem in localizability, right? Even before you send it to your German translator and you input it and you test for it, you can immediately see that, oh, look, this string is being truncated, or this string needs to go to a second line, or that sort of thing. So very, very handy to do that. So let's look at, let me save that and close, and let me switch. Let me switch to Dutch just to do that one first. And if I run this, I should immediately see that. So you see what happened there is that the Multilingual App Toolkit under the covers is actually taking those XLIF files and providing that to Visual Studio, which then gets translated and then gives you this horrible translation. Please, please don't judge me. Don't rate my session based on this translation. Yes, did you have a question?
How do you take a different context into account?
How do you take a different what?
Context into account.
So context.
Same string in English, but have different context in another language.
Right, so the question is, what happens if I have the same string in one context? It might be in English, I might use the same string in three different ways, and it might be the same string, but in Dutch, it might be three different strings because the languages have a different way of conjugating and so on. It will have to be up to you to understand that not to reuse strings, right? If you have a string that's the same in three different places, even in English, if it's the same string, you would want to provide three different strings. Try not to reuse strings. That's just the best practice for localization to do that. Same thing, sometimes it's tempting to actually try and combine two strings together in different ways to provide a localization. That makes it almost impossible to translate because different languages provide different ways of conjugating, and the verb sometimes goes on the front versus the back and so on. So just don't do those sorts of things and you'll be good. There's lots of best practices around there. The other thing I wanted to provide is, we talked about this earlier, is localizability. And so if you look here, I have my pseudo language. And so you'll see here that I've added English QPS-PLOC. That is something provided in Windows for the specific use of developers to provide. Obviously, end users will not be using that. And it's not something that an end user would actually find. And so if I go in and add a language, and if I go to English, you'll see it's not actually there, right? So an end user wouldn't actually spot that. The way you get to it for your own uses as a developer is you would actually type QPS-PLOC, and then it doesn't find it. Why is that? That's weird. QPS-PLOC. Ah, there it is. I guess you have to do it at the root. I've never done it from the region. So anyway, so I'm at the root. It's grayed out because I've already added it, so I can add it again. But for your own purposes, please go and do this. I strongly suggest you do this if you're doing any sort of international work. It's very, very handy. So QPS-PLOC is there. And so I think I moved it up. Yeah, I did. Oh, so that's my primary language. So now if I run the app, it should give me this crazy localization here. And so you see things like, in this case, I know already that happy dogs there right? You can see here right away, I can see that there's a problem, right? The happy dog string at the top there where it says a happy dog is a flea free, and then I don't see an exclamation and it closed square brackets, that tells me I have a localizability issue. And so your testers would be looking for this, right? They would be looking for places where you can't see the square bracket. And you'll see it adds different numbers of exclamations. I think it's 25%. It tries to make your string about 25% longer, because that's, on average, that's about what you're going to see in terms of differences in length. And so that's what you want to test for. Any questions on Multilingual App Toolkit? Super, super useful tool. I strongly suggest you go and download it and play with it. You might find yourself finding bugs you didn't even know you had. Okay. You saw that Multilingual App Toolkit actually used Microsoft Translator from the Bing team. This is super handy, again, for first passes, and it does all of that work for you. You may actually want to do that yourself. So you may have content that you may want to provide translation for. So for instance, how many people use Facebook? Nobody? Really? You're all very productive developers. So if you look at Facebook today, you'll see it says translate this language, or this, if someone provides a status update, there's a translate this. That's actually coming from Microsoft Translator. And so that's doing two things. One is it's translating for you, and sometimes it gives you these crazy translations, but it's close enough that you can understand what the person is trying to tell you. And the other thing it's doing is Facebook is actually providing that information back to the Bing translation research team, and they're using that to make it better. And so as you can imagine, this language translation is getting better and better. It's never going to be 100%. I strongly suggest that you not use this as a primary translation, but it's really handy. And so Microsoft Translator APIs, you can translate. You can also detect a language. So if that's important for you, for whatever, if someone's entering text in a string somewhere and you need to detect what language that is, there's an API for that. And it can also speak the language. So it can actually take some text and speak it for, give you the actual audio file for it. It's actually pretty good. If you're using Windows Phone, for instance, I suggest that you go and download the Microsoft Translator app, because it will do things like take text, push the button, it will translate it into text for you, and then speak it for you, which can be handy. And it gives you a sense for how good it is. So again, this is some APIs that you can add to your application or to your website or whatever. And it's all microsofttranslator.com/dev. Suggest you do that. I also wanted to provide some resources for you if you're just getting started with localizability. There's a few things that will get you going fast. There's a bunch of samples that are really handy. So there's an application resources and localization sample that will show you how to localize apps. There's a date and time formatting sample, and there's a number formatting and parsing sample. And I've actually bundled all of these resources into one link. So if you go to bit.ly/benriga-worldready, with the capitals have to be there, you'll get a link and it will show you all the resources that are handy. Another set of sites that are important, the Multilingual App Toolkit for Visual Studio, the one that I just showed you, really easy. The Microsoft Translator Developer site, and then the Microsoft Language Portal. Again, super handy if you're doing translation and you don't speak a specific language, you can get some really good translations there. Again, that's also in that link. And then finally, please follow me. I enjoy getting those messages that say, John Smith followed you. And again, if you're not going to do it for me, do it for the kitty. Otherwise, you know, who knows what might happen. Okay, so I am going to stop there. We have 6 minutes. If you have any specific questions, more than happy to take them. If you're too shy to ask questions, I'll be here for a little while longer. And then, of course, if you remember questions tomorrow or the day after or next week, about.me/ben.riga, and you can reach me in any one of those. Thank you. No questions. Okay.